First, if you're heading to happy hour after work today, you're probably not thinking about it as part of a long, long tradition that dates back to human beings' earliest ancestors.
But it turns out you are. From early civilizations in Sumeria and ancient Egypt to saloons in the Wild West, our next guest says as long as people have been around, they've been getting drunk. Mark Forsyth is a writer and author of the book A Short History of Drunkenness: How, Why, Where, and When Humankind Has Gotten Merry from the Stone Age to the Present. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So first off, great topic. Second, why was this a topic that you wanted to explore?
I've always been interested in back in my early 20s, I was sitting in a pub with a bunch of people, we were all getting drunk, and I thought, why are we doing this? And in some sense, it didn't. Some people have that thought and they stopped drinking forever, whereas I didn't stop drinking at all. I just became curious as if an alien came down from outer space and said, what are you up to? How would I explain it? What's actually going on? What are the rules? Why are we doing this on a Friday night rather than on Tuesday morning? Why are we doing it in this place and not that place? And what is this thing, which I very much enjoy, but what is it?
And you say this isn't a book about alcohol per se. It's about drunkenness. Why is that an important distinction here?
Well, there's an awful lot of books about fine wines, fine whiskies, all that sort of thing, about how alcohol is made, whereas I was much more interested in about the effect that alcohol has on you. And it's always the same active ingredient, whatever it is you're drinking, whether it's beer or whiskey or the most expensive wine available from the champagne fields of France or just some moonshine from a still in the backwoods. It's always the same ingredient, but we react to it differently. And in different times, in different places in history, we've done different things. We thought it produced different effects. Because one of the very odd things about alcohol is it will do to you what you think it will do to you. This is something which can be scientifically tested. If you come from a culture that tells you that alcohol will make you violent, then when you drink, you'll become violent. Whereas if you come from a culture that says alcohol will make you see visions of the ancestral spirits, then you will see visions of the ancestral spirits. And it's a beautiful, it's a drug that gives back to you exactly what you expected to find. But the rules keep changing, and they've changed, and everyone has got drunk in different ways and at different times. If you were getting drunk in ancient China, for example, you'd be waiting to see the ancestral spirits. That's why you got drunk. You got drunk until you saw granddad grinning at you. If I got so drunk that I saw my grandfather grinning at me, that's the point I'd call it a day.
That's when we cut you off.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. Granddad, leave the room.
So you start to go back in time, and you go back and you go back, and you start to think, well, where did this really start? Where did we start to, hit the bottle in history? And you kind of find out that it starts with evolution, and you say that we really kind of evolved to drink and to kind of get drunk. How did this happen?
Well, all of the higher apes and an awful lot of it's just they can't produce alcohol. But alcohol occurs naturally. You just leave fruit to go off and it starts becoming alcoholic. And some places fruit becomes very alcoholic very quickly. There's an island off Costa Rica, which I've always wanted to visit, but I never actually have, where there's a particular fruit which goes very alcoholic. And the that live there like to just eat this fruit at a rate which approximates to, if you're going to do a human equivalent, of about a couple of bottles of wine an hour. And they just lie around in the forest canopy absolutely drunk, and occasionally they fall out and hit the ground, and I'm afraid they die. Elephants like to get drunk as well. But we have one particular mutation which makes us the second best drinker in the entire animal kingdom by body weight. And that mutation seems to have occurred about 10 million years ago, about the same time that we came down from the trees. And a very plausible theory is that we came down from the trees because we wanted to get at the lovely ripe fruit on the forest floor, which was a little bit alcoholic. Humans have an incredibly developed nose for sniffing out alcohol. We're like, in the same way that great white sharks can sniff blood from miles away, we are really good at sniffing alcohol from a distance. We find the fruit on the forest floor. It's a little bit decayed. It's a little bit overripe. It's got the alcohol in it. We start eating it. We love it. And then there are other evolutionary little funny things that go on in our brain. For example, it would be a good idea if we then just stuffed ourselves and made some fat deposits. And that's why when people have a lot to drink, they start getting really hungry. A starvation response for some reason kicks off in your brain, probably to make you eat all of this overripe fruit which you found on the forest floor, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and I like that you write about in the book about sort of what you were talking about there, this, I believe you call it the drunken monkey hypothesis, your words, not mine. But
they're not even my words. The drunken monkey hypothesis, as funny, as comical as that sounds as a title for a scientific theory, is a proper scientific theory.
Okay, so let's not sell that short then. That's a proper scientific theory. But what's interesting, too, is you kind of find out that this sort of helps explain why we're kind of a social species, why, in a way, alcohol kind of brought us together and we bring it out kind of at social gatherings. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, well, the evolutionary theory is that the thing about alcohol is it's very nutritious. About 10% of all the enzymes in your liver are actually designed just to turn alcohol into energy. It's a great thing, but obviously it leaves you a little bit helpless. And so the evolutionary theory of why we drink socially and together is that we are that can therefore protect each other when we're drunk. And that therefore if the saber-toothed tiger Tyrannosaurus rexes didn't exist at the time, but a saber-toothed tiger came through the forest and found one drunk guy passed out, they'd eat him. But if they find 20 drunk humans, then they're going to just back off and leave us be. And that's why at base we really like as a species to drink in groups. When you meet your buddies at the bar, they have got your back and have always had your back for millions of years.
Which is a great thing to tell your friends when you're at the bar drinking with them.
Absolutely.
We are talking with Mark Forsyth right now. He is the author of A Short History of Drunkenness. And let's fast forward a couple thousand of years and head around the world to learn a little bit more about our history with alcohol, about humans drinking alcohol. And I want to talk about Turkey. You talk in the book about the oldest known building in the world and its purpose being a little bit of a mystery, but there's a good chance that it had to do with beer. Tell us more about that.
So there's Göbekli Tepe, which is 5000 BC, oldest building in the world. It must have required a huge number of people to get together to build it, and an awful lot of organization. But the weird thing is, this is pre-agriculture. This is when humans were still small tribes, hunter-gatherers, running around chasing people, animals and hunting them. And how, therefore, did they get together to build a massive temple complex? And it's also in a place, this great big temple complex, in a place which is no good for agriculture. There's no real signs of agriculture, except there are some little trace elements you can find. They were found by a guy called Patrick McGovern, University of Pennsylvania. Little trace elements in the stone jars there of beer at the bottom of these stone jars. So the best theory as to why this first great building was built was that people were getting together to make beer, because to make beer you have to stick in one place just briefly, and then you can all get together and you can get drunk together as a large group. And it's a perfect place to get drunk. It's a lovely big hill in Turkey with a view over the plains where everybody would have hunted. But it seems that all the tribes from all around would come up onto this big hill. They would cooperate to make beer, and they would cooperate to build this great big temple.
And it seems like, you know, you write about there's almost like a chicken and an egg scenario where what came first, the beer or the agriculture? I would have thought maybe it's agriculture, and then while you're waiting for stuff to grow, the beer was kind of a side thing. But you say that maybe the beer was sort of the push in the direction of agriculture, and that was what came first.
There's a bunch of arguments for that. Yeah, that we settled. Basically, when you stop being a hunter-gatherer and you start being agriculture-based society, you stop getting beet, but you start getting lots of corn. But if you just have lots of corn and it's in the form of bread, then you don't have any vitamin B. And if you don't have any vitamin B, and vitamin B you can get from meat and you can get it from beer, but if you get it just from bread, you can't get it from bread. So if you try getting it from bread, you will die. Man cannot live on bread alone, quite literally, because bread doesn't contain vitamin B. So we must have therefore gone for the beer, and the beer maintains vitamin B. And in fact, beer is more nutritious. If you've got a bunch of barley and you want to get the most amount of calories out of it, most amount of nutrition possible, do not make bread, make beer. Beer is more nutritious because essentially fermentation is kind of outsourcing the digestion process. So it's liquid bread, but it's better than bread, and it contains vitamin B. There are other reasons, and I don't know if you'd want to know them at this time in the afternoon, but there are other reasons involving the fact that beer sterilizes things. And if you settle down in one place, then you are essentially eating and getting water in the same place that you are defecating, to put it as delicately as possible. And if you're just drinking the water, then you are going to get very ill very quickly. So you can't have been drinking the water. That's the thing about agriculture. It makes you settle in one place. So again, you'd have to have got the beer before the bread.
Well, that's a great place to take a break right there. We are talking with Mark Forsyth, author of A Short History of Drunkenness, about the history of getting drunk.
And we want to hear your thoughts at 800-642-1234. When you've traveled to a new country, what have you observed about other cultures' relationship with alcohol? Are you surprised to hear about the sacred place alcohol held in certain cultures? What questions do you have about how people have gotten drunk throughout history? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
We'll pick up that conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson.
And I'm Chris Molina. Right now, we're picking up our conversation with Mark Forsyth, author of A Short History of Drunkenness, about how and why humans have gotten drunk throughout history.
We want to take your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest about the role of alcohol in early civilizations? What do you think about the way our relationship to alcohol has changed over time? And if you've ever experienced a new culture, what did you think about their drinking traditions? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
And Mark, you alluded to this earlier in the interview, but you said that, you know, culture kind of defines how we experience alcohol. So if culture is saying, yes, alcohol is holy, drink alcohol, people are going to do that because they're going to think it is going to give them faith. And this has happened throughout history, including in ancient Sumeria, where Sumerians looked at beer as holy and sacred. Could you talk more about their relationship to beer in that country?
Well, they had a beer goddess, Ninkasi, but in fact, Sumeria would have been, if you went back to 2000 BC, 4,000 years ago, to, say, ancient Uruk, it would actually have been quite familiar to us in a way which is odd, given the whole history of drunkenness, because they had a goddess of beer. They had bars, which we would have recognized, the usual kind of places. They were little microbrewery bars, essentially, and a lot of it seems quite familiar. When you go into the history, they would sit and sing songs, drink beer. You ordered a big cauldron of beer and a bunch of straws, and everyone, because the beer had an awful lot of sediment, which are all stuff which floated to the top, so you put a straw in to get beneath the solid stuff and suck out the beer. So you drink that with your pals, and you would sing songs, you'd tell jokes. It was all pretty familiar and rather tame, and it was probably in all of human history, 4,000 years ago, is where we would have felt most at home, as opposed to, say, ancient Egypt, where everything was very odd in the religious drinking front, and they would get utterly, utterly drunk until they saw a vision of the goddess Hathor, and it was all engineered to mess with their heads in the most unpleasant possible way. And you were required to drink until you vomited, and then drink more until you vomited. But Sumeria was kind of happy drinking culture. They were just pleased with themselves. They had lots of kinds of beer, and they had drinking competitions, and they told jokes. In fact, I found the earliest example of an animal walks into a bar joke is from ancient Sumeria. There's a we all know those jokes about, you know, horse,
sure,
walks the bar. and why the long face. And though the joke is, the punchline of the joke is lost, you can tell that it's an animal walks into a bar joke. And the joke goes, a dog walks into a bar and says, I can't see anything, I'll have another one. And I don't know what that punchline means, but I know it's a punchline.
Well, so you said that, in ancient Sumeria, it was more like what we're accustomed to now. Ancient Egypt was a little bit more recent. It was a little bit more extreme. Did you find that throughout history, we kind of go in these waves where maybe it's a little bit more moderate, and then if you jump ahead in history to a different place, it's a little bit more extreme?
Yeah, things can go utterly crazy, and they can go utterly crazy very, very fast in ways that you'd find frightening. I mean, a terrible little blip in drinking history was what thing called the London gin craze, which essentially we didn't have spirits in effect until about 1600, 1700. There were no spirits. Everyone was just drinking beer or wine. Everything was therefore just low strength, and everyone thought they knew how to deal with it. You had a pint or a half pint of, you know, a large glass of this thing, and then spirits come along, and you've got gin, and you've got whiskey, and you've got all these things, and people just ordered them in the same amounts, these strange exotic new drinks that they'd always drunk, because you'd drunk a pint of beer, so now I'll have a pint of this new thing called gin, and people just dropped down dead, and alcoholism took off. And I mean, it didn't help that gin was flavored with all sorts of crazy stuff like sulfuric acid, and you should never flavor your drinks with sulfuric acid. It doesn't help with the digestion. Things change very quickly. And also, I mean, just the Wild West Saloon was a pretty frightening place, and that's really relatively recent, and your own country. But I mean, America was the reason that Prohibition came in, was that the USA did have, in the late 19th century, a big alcohol problem.
We are talking right now with Mark Forsyth. He is the author of A Short History of Drunkenness, How, Why, Where, and When Humankind Has Gotten Merry from the Stone Age to the Present. And I want to talk more about America, but before we do, I want to go to the phones, and Richard is calling in from Madison. Richard, hi, go ahead.
Hi, yeah. We've been talking a lot about drinking in groups and how this is sort of like a religious or holy sacred experience, but I'm wondering if your guests have found anything about what society thinks about the lone drinker in reference to all of this holy sacred experience.
All right, Richard, thanks for that call. Mark, what do you think?
The lone drinker is very hard for a historian because, generally speaking, lone drinkers don't write much about themselves. You can't work out what it is they've been doing. And obviously, if they get drunk in there, and they're probably too drunk to write themselves. So it becomes, there's very little in my book, I'm afraid, about the lone drinker, because he's a kind of undocumented guy. There's no particular reason that he shouldn't be having religious experiences or non-religious experiences or any other kind of experience, but I'm afraid he's a little bit off my track, because there's a problem with the history of alcohol, which is you not only have to have people getting drunk, but you have to have other people writing it down. And a lot of the time, in a lot of cultures, the sources are great. A Viking feast, how it began, everybody knows. How it ended, nobody's that certain.
Mark, we've got a few minutes left, and I'm curious, a lot of the behavior that you describe in the book and that we've talked about here today would be behaviors that I think today we look at as dangerous and we would label as alcoholism. And you used that word a little bit earlier in the interview. And I'm curious, at what point in history do we start to see that acknowledged as maybe a serious health threat?
So a funny thing about alcoholism is that it's very, very hard to define. Ask any psychiatrist for a definition of alcoholism, and if they're a responsible psychiatrist, they'll say, we don't know, we don't have a precise one. It's when your drinking becomes a problem, but exactly how that works is a difficult thing to say. Now, there always have been alcoholics, people who drink outside the rules, people who make their drunkenness a problem. People are drunk when they shouldn't be. People who are drunk when society expects them to be sober. But that's a permanent thing of history. The question is though, when does society expect you to be sober? And that changes all the time. When does society expect you to be drunk? And that also changes all the time. So it's a very hard thing to say. I mean, a classic thing in this, just to go with big picture, is, for example, there are things which, it's anthropological terminology, wet cultures and dry cultures. In a wet culture, you drink a little bit all the time. If you've ever been to Italy and hung around in a bar, you'll know what this is like. People have a drink at halfway through the morning, a little drink with lunch. They never get drunk, but there's always a little drink being had all the way through the day. A dry culture isn't actually dry in our sense. A dry culture is a culture where you don't drink Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but Friday night, damn, you go for it and absolutely get completely drunk. Now, if you live in a dry culture like that, which says it's fine to get very drunk on Friday night, and you get very drunk on Friday night, but then you stay sober Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, then you're fitting in with everyone else in your culture, and you are being fine, and the stuff you do on a Friday night is, well, you know, the stuff you do on a Friday night in your culture, as long as you're fitting in and not killing your liver, then you're all right.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. We are going to have to leave it there. Mark Forsythe is the author of A Short History of Drunkenness, How, Why, Where, and When Humankind Has Gotten Merry from the Stone Age to the Present. And you can chime in with more of your thoughts and your questions over on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or tweet us if you've gone to a different country and you've seen their behaviors, their attitudes towards alcohol being different than our own. Let us know. Tweet us at Central Time WPR, or post over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.